couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, we only have one sequel. We had two last week. I guess that's better. Good job, Hollywood, for not making it just all about sequels. But the other big movie is an adaptation of a Broadway play. That would be Jersey Boys. Then Think Like a Man 2 is, of course, the sequel to Think Like a Man. The two original movies this weekend are from the smaller category. You've got The Rover and The Signal. Those are both smaller films in limited release, expanding wider this weekend. We also have news. We have the trailer park. We have the DVD roundup, box office predictions. And we also have a red carpet interview with Kevin Hart, who was recently in Cleveland to promote Think Like a Man 2. So I had a chance to go up and see him and do a little bit of an interview with him. We'll hear that in a later segment. Before we get to all of that, here's how you get in touch with me. If you want to email me, you can email fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the interwebinet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And then finally, if you want to reach me on Twitter, twitter.com/KevinCarr. Let's move on into the news.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. There's a lot happening. There was some information that dropped last week, like right about the time we were doing the show, that I sort of brushed over because this story was initially broken by who I consider probably one of the sleaziest people in Hollywood. And you're talking about a industry that has some pretty sleazy people in it. I'm not even going to give her the credit to say her name. But apparently there was a leaked Justice League schedule for the DC Comics, basically playing catch-up and trying to get to where Marvel is. And if you don't know the difference between Marvel and DC, just a real quick background, there are two different comic companies having their own different groups of superheroes. And of course, DC has Superman and Batman and Green Lantern and Wonder Woman and the Justice League, whereas Marvel has Spider-Man and the X-Men and the Avengers and Iron Man. Now, the difference is that Marvel, before it was purchased by Disney and owned by one studio, Marvel was just, it's an independent studio that was going, you know, they contracted Spider-Man with Sony, they contracted Fantastic Four and X-Men with Fox, they contracted The Punisher with Lionsgate, and they contracted Paramount to with the Avengers movies. While the Marvel heroes were spread out, they at least had the single mind of Marvel using the different studios to make them work. And you're never going to get that crossover with Spider-Man and the Avengers and X-Men, which is kind of a shame. We might end up getting something close to that. But ultimately, people always thought, well, DC should be able to have their stuff together because they're owned by Warner Brothers, and Warner's owned them since the 80s. Which should mean that they could do integrated movies, and they've not done it. And it took Marvel to do these integrated movies and take it out of DC's hands. And DC was stumbling around making movies like Catwoman and Green Lantern, which wasn't consistent with the Nolan Batman movies, and they have Man of Steel, which also isn't consistent with the Nolan Batman movies, yet they're still trying to fit it together. They're more disparate and spread out, DC is. Finally, after the Avengers made $5 billion, DC said, hey, we need to get our you-know-what together and start a Justice League movie. But see, where Marvel had taken 4 years to get there after planning and different movies, like it had five movies leading up to it, DC didn't know what it was doing. And so finally, they're getting their stuff together. And it looks like we're going to be getting that Justice League movie in May of 2017. But in order to do that, they got to set the groundwork. And so, of course, that's why we have Batman versus Superman, which comes out next May. And they're back-ending everybody into it. They've announced that they're going to have Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. There just is a rumor that Jason Momoa is going to be Aquaman. Aquaman, we know we're going to be in a universe where Aquaman could beat the snot out of Superman and Batman at the same time. They've apparently released a schedule. It was leaked and that in July, so after Batman versus Superman, we're going to have Shazam in July. Then in Christmas, we're going to have Sandman, which is kind of out there. That's not a Justice League character. That's a real outlier. That's the one I'm most interested in to see what they do. And then the following May will be the Justice League movie, followed up with Wonder Woman in July, Flash and Green Lantern team up. They're finally going to be doing team up movies in 2017. And then Man of Steel 2 in 2018, which wasn't Batman versus Superman supposed to be a Man of Steel 2? I don't know. DC's still in scramble mode, and they're still trying to get all their ducks in a row, and Marvel's moving on to Phase 3. The other big news that kind of happened very late in the week last week and has been developing over the week is Han Solo injured his ankle. Well, really not Han Solo. It was Harrison Ford. on the set of Star Wars Episode 7, apparently the door in the Millennium Falcon fell on his leg and it broke. Originally they said ankle, now they're saying it's his leg that's broken. He might be gone for 2 months from production. It's a big enough movie that there's so much stuff that they can shoot around him. And since supposedly, you know, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford aren't supposed to be the main focus of this movie, they're bringing in younger blood, there's plenty of stuff to shoot, but this is one of those things where people are like, oh my gosh, is this going to be cursed? And I found it hilarious when they leaked pictures of the Millennium Falcon. People are like, yay, the Millennium Falcon! And the Millennium Falcon's like, no, I'm going to get you back! So the Millennium Falcon's like Christine, the 1958 Plymouth Fury from the Stephen King book. It is out for blood, and it took a pint of Harrison Ford's. Now it's probably high as a kite. I'm curious to see if there's any other problems that come up, because you always have these movies that seem to be cursed, that have bad things happen on set, that accidents happen. The Thing was one of them. The Exorcist is one that has sort of that, ooh, is it cursed story going around it. So we'll see what happens. We'll see how smooth the development of the next Star Wars movie is after this. A couple other just spinoff news. You've got Doctor Strange, which is a sort of an outlier of Marvel's Phase 3. They've got that movie is now in the works. People are thinking Benedict Cumberbatch, Jared Leto, or Tom Hardy as Doctor Strange should be coming in 2016. Scott Derrickson directing. This is about a sorcerer. So it's going to be out there. It's going to be like trying to launch the Thor movie, which is a bit of a hard sell to somebody who doesn't read the comic books. But I'm looking forward to it. I think we could really get into some neat stuff once you get past those high-level mainstream superheroes and bring in some of the more out-there properties. And then finally, we've got Star Trek and Transformers and G.I. Joe sequels all coming in 2016. Then the final piece of news for sequels is the Resident Evil series will be coming to an end with Resident Evil 6, which is about 3 or 4 movies too late. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies, and you hear that music, that means we are moving into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is the Expendables 3. Each trailer's had a different tone. The first trailer they dropped for an Expendables 3 was just to show all the people who are going to be back. And then they had another one that was a little more whimsical. And then this one's more action heavy. It shows bringing back Wesley Snipes. A lot of people are losing their minds over the fact that this is going to be rated PG-13. I really don't care. At this point, do you need all the blood? I don't think you need all the blood. If you just need splattering blood, because that's what happened in Expendables 2. They just made it R-rated by throwing in some digital blood shots. And that didn't necessarily make it a better movie. Made a couple deaths a little more, oh my gosh, look at that, but it was still digital blood. So Expendables 3, as long as it's a fun action movie, I'm going to be happy with it.
Great to have you back. No better place to be. It can't be.
We were close once. We started this whole Expendables thing together, but we had a falling out.
What are you going to do?
Reload.
This is one of those rare movies where the cast can't get too crowded unless you're putting in lame people. Like when they put in the cover, they're like, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Lee, Statham, Hemsworth, not even the good Hemsworth, Liam Hemsworth. He's not in this one, obviously. So The Expendables 3 opens on August 15th. The next movie I want to talk about is Dolphin Tale 2, which opens on September 12th.
Winter's been such an inspiration for me. Isn't she just amazing?
Your female bottlenose, Winter.
She's not doing well, Clay.
No one's allowed back here. Winter's not feeling very well.
Winter needs to be paired with another female, and soon. I'm giving you 30 days to correct the problem.
I was not a huge fan of Dolphin Tale because it was just so freaking corny, and it looks like this is going to be exactly the same thing. And more power to you if you love the Dolphin Tale movie. This one, it's cross-pollinating with Good Blood. The first voice you hear in the trailer, I believe, is the girl, the original girl from Soul Surfer, the girl who's got her arm bitten off by a tiger shark, and it was sort of a faith-based inspirational movie a couple years ago with Anna Sophia Robb. This one, it plays like a cheesy direct-to-video movie, but it, I guess it's got a bigger enough cast and people. I don't know. I'll see it. I'm going to have to see it, and it'll probably be perfectly fine, but it's not my cup of tea. Anyways, that opens on September 12th. I need to go to a break now, and when I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Rover and The Signal. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys of the Movies coming right back at you. I'm going to be doing the non-sequels, the smaller movies for the week. These actually both opened last week, but they opened some of them in very limited release. In fact, The Rover, I think, was only opened in like a handful of screens, and The Signal was maybe in 100 screens. They both are expanding this week. Part of the reason I want to talk about these is they're both, well, definitely The Signal, but The Rover is marginally science fiction. It's science fiction the way The Road Warrior science fiction. It's a post-apocalyptic type of movie, and it takes place in Australia. But these are sometimes where you see the more innovative stuff happening in movies. You see movies that are outside the mainstream. They're not cheesy. They got a little bit of different things happening. They maybe make you think a little bit more. And I don't want a steady diet of this stuff, but sometimes these smaller fringe movies can be more intriguing than the very predictable, expected movies that are hitting the big wide releases. And fewer people are going to see them, obviously, but they're worth checking out. And the first one I want to talk about is The Rover. In the lawlessness after the collapse of the Australian government, a man makes his singular mission to find the men who stole his car.
Let's go! Come on, come on, come on! Turn the car around!
We're not turning around, he's gone!
What do you mean he's gone? He's my brother!
Tell me where your brother is.
He's going south, a long way from here. I'll take you to him, I promise.
Your brother left you to die. He's abandoned you out here to me. You don't learn to fight, your death's gonna come real soon.
This movie stars Guy Pearce in that role as the guy who's looking for his car. And it's a very understated movie. It's a very slow burn. Kind of a little bit like Under the Skin, if you remember that movie from a couple months ago with Scarlett Johansson as the sort of alien robot hunting down people. This takes its time and it doesn't give you much backstory. You're expected to just accept what's happening and wonder what happened in the past to make people become who they are. The other movie this reminded me a bit of is The Road, which was a Cormac McCarthy novel adapted into a film a couple years ago with Viggo Mortensen. It is kind of a what-if movie, not just what if the government collapses, what would happen. But it's also a what-if movie of how would you deal with being in a world where people are reducing themselves to the lowest common denominator. And the take-home for something like this is for a country like Australia, which is very stable, and while it's wide and spread out and huge, very much like America, it has a stable government and it has society and it has rules and it has laws. But if the government were to collapse, what would end up happening and what would happen to our humanity and what are we clinging to? And you see throughout there these snapshots of different people and what they're clinging to. And sometimes they're clinging to something good and sometimes they're clinging to something really, really quite horrible. And it's an interesting film with some fantastic acting done by Guy Pearce because we don't know much about his character, just the fact that he wants his car back. And in a way, it's sort of like the darkest timeline version of Pee-wee's Big Adventure you're ever going to see, where it is just about this MacGuffin, which is the car he's trying to find. But in the process, he picks up one of the brothers of one of the guys who stole this car, played by Robert Pattinson, who's okay in this. First of all, I've never been fully convinced that Robert Pattinson is a decent actor. I've seen him, obviously, in more than just the Twilight movies, stuff like Water for Elephants and Remember Me and Cosmopolis. He's not a very versatile actor. I think there's something there. And his biggest challenge in his career is to overcome Edward. Not just overcome Edward Cullen, the character and the heartthrob and the OMG Twi Mom status that he had, but to overcome the bad habits he picked up spending 4 or 5 years in the Twilight franchise. Unlike Taylor Lautner, who is not a good actor, definitely not a good actor, and he's not going to rise much above Jacob in the Twilight movies, but Robert Pattinson actually has a possibility too, but he's sort of floundering around, not knowing to get his footing, and he makes some decisions that aren't that good in terms of acting. His character is okay. It's got in some interesting parts. There's a couple scenes where he actually kind of shines in, but other times he is just sort of, I wouldn't say he's phoning it in, but he's going into his stock repertoire of acting ability. He's fine with Guy Pearce, because Guy Pearce pretty much carries the film, and it does give you a different take, and you won't recognize him immediately as Robert Pattinson because he does look a little bit different. Anyways, ultimately, I think The Rover is an interesting movie. You should check it out. It's worth seeing and worth putting in your watching list. So I say The Rover kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. The next movie I'm going to be talking about is The Signal. After being ambushed while tracking down an infamous hacker, a young man finds himself captive in a government facility that studies him as if he were an alien.
Can you tell me your name?
Nicholas Eastman.
Are you from Earth?
Yes, I'm from Earth.
Due to circumstances surrounding your condition, I'm afraid that our information is extremely limited.
You mean my condition? Wait, what's my condition?
Can you recall for me the first time you encountered the signal?
The what?
We're not 100% certain about what we're dealing with here.
I remember when I saw the trailer for this, I was very excited. This was dropping around the time that there were trailers for Under the Skin and Enemy and The Machine and a bunch of these really kind of out there movies that are in limited release that were never going to be mainstream. And this looked very intriguing. Similar to The Rover, it's a slow burn, but it's far easier to define as a science fiction film. But it also works as a what-if movie, because here's this kid who wakes up and he's in this facility. There's Lawrence Fishburne as the doctor who's dressed in a hazmat suit the whole time, and you don't know what's wrong with him, and there was potentially some sort of alien presence that caused something to him, and there's some mystery there. It's a very different film. But it's totally worth checking out. And it's kind of a bummer because this movie opened limited last week in about 100 theaters or so. It actually opened in my hometown. They didn't screen it. And this is what irritates me about the studios in Hollywood sometimes. I want screenings as much as I can so I can actually do my job and report on these and see them in advance. But a movie like The Signal needs to be screened. It should be screened. This is a movie that needs the press. You don't need press for Think Like a Man 2. And while I appreciate Sony screening that, that's not a movie that I'm as critical a part of talking to people about. But most of you out there probably have never heard of The Signal. Most of you out there probably, even in cities where it's showing, you don't know that it's showing because it's not a high-profile movie. The studio should go out of their way to show this movie to people. If you end up with a bad review, just deal with the fact that bad review, at least people are aware the movie exists. If they have a knowledge that the movie exists in the theaters, maybe they'll go check it out when it hits video. But right now it's just existing in a vacuum, and it's a real shame because this independent realm is where some of the most intriguing and interesting and brilliantly written speculative fiction is happening, and it's not getting the support of the people who are releasing the doggone movies themselves. Ultimately, The Signal, I don't want to say too much about it because It's worth seeing and just kind of going in cold and experiencing. But I'll tell you, it's a neat movie. It's different from anything else you're going to see. You might be able to guess certain things that are going on, but it's different and it's unique and it's well made. And it's the kind of movie that even if you walk out and didn't particularly like it, I don't think it's a waste of time at all. So I'm going to say The Signal rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
And it's worth checking out. I wish Focus would have gotten off its duff and actually screened it for people widely so people knew it existed. Anyways, I need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking about Jersey Boys and Think Like a Man 2. Like a man, walk like me. This song was not written about me. It did not say waddle like Kevin. That sounds like more of something that LMFAO would write as opposed to walk like a man. Not that I have trouble walking, but I'm a little hefty. Yeah, you may have guessed that I have a little bit of weight on me. I have a couple more pounds than I should. But I make my way around, but it's not always the prettiest thing to watch. And oh my God, wait till you see if I ever get scared and I have to actually run somewhere. It's kind of like watching a Rhino getting ready to charge. And I'm probably, once I got going, I could probably go about 50 feet and be unstoppable. I'd be like Juggernaut in the X-Men. And then I would just run out of steam and fall over. So yeah, Walk Like a Man was not written with me in mind. But Jersey Boys was also not written for me in mind. It was originally written for the Broadway stage. And now they're making a movie out of it, or they made a movie out of it. Clint Eastwood directs this adaptation of the smash Broadway hit about the rise to fame of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
You want to hear the real story? I'm the one you want to talk to, Tommy DeVito. Wasn't for me, we all would have wound up with a bullet in our head.
Friends like that, you should change your name to Sinatra.
I'm going to be as big as Sinatra.
I would love to introduce you to a new discovery of mine, Frankie Valli. Dream of
wild, I heard them all, but I never heard a voice like Frankie Valli's. I know I need to write for this voice.
Listen, we got something for you, all right?
Sherry.
Set up the 8-track. We're going to double Frankie's voice. It's going to explode right off the radio.
I'm going to just preface this by saying I've not seen the original production. I've not seen the stage performance. I hear it's fantastic. I hear it is like the thing to see. There's a permanent installation of it in Vegas. I got a friend who goes to Vegas all the time, and he's like, oh, yeah. He's not seen it either, which is kind of funny. But I know that there's also a lot of people out there who are extremely excited for this movie. They tend to be older people because they're going to be the people who remember listening to Frankie Valli on the radio. So, you know, maybe the 20-year-olds in the audience are not going to be dying, oh, I can't wait to hear Frankie. Frankie Valli, oh my gosh, I remember when Cherry came out. Because you don't, unless you're in your 60s. This is made for a very specific audience, which is the older generation. Also because it's directed by Clint Eastwood. And Clint Eastwood's an old dude. Let's not mince words. I'm not insulting Clint Eastwood. I'm just pointing out the fact that he's old. He's an old dude. And that's great. He's still kicking. I thought he was supposed to retire, but apparently he hasn't. He's still making movies. This is, I believe, his first movie since J. Edgar. It's the first one he's directed. He was in Trouble with the Curve a couple years ago, but he didn't direct that movie. But he did direct J. Edgar. It's funny, I really kind of have to compare this movie to that, because this one and J. Edgar and Flags of Our Fathers and Letters from Iwo Jima and Gran Torino and Invictus all have a very Clint Eastwood look to it. It's this very clean, held down camera. You're never going to see him do shaky cam. And almost this sort of muted tone, sort of like a faded photograph, is how he has his movie shot. So it really feels like a Clint Eastwood movie. And it's a Clint, and I don't know if I'd call it a musical either, because a lot of people say, oh, is this his first musical? Although I think he did play Misty for Me. It's a musical show, but the difference between the Broadway show versus this movie is part of the catch of the Broadway show is you get to go see this Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons cover band as part of just sort of like a concert built into the story. Whereas that's not the reason to go see a movie anymore. You can listen to Frankie Valli. It's not a live performance. So they actually toned down some of the songs. They don't have as many songs. They don't have the long extended versions of them. They have a big long curtain call with all the songs to it to appease the fans. But the rest of the film is pretty straightforward. And it plays out like, you know, every other musician biopic. You know, like Ray or Walk the Line or any of these movies. Because let's face it, when you are a music star, you run into the same ups and downs. It's a pretty standard arc that happens for these people who go into that business. You know, you start small, you're struggling, you kind of have your hit, then you have your party time, then you have your recovering, then you have your period of time where you're trying to keep your name and you're aging. So it is somewhat pedantic in that way. It does kind of cover very similar ground that we've seen before. Now, like I said, I'm not a huge fan of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. I like some of the songs. They're very catchy, but I can only take so much. So for me, I would never want to go see Jersey Boys, the musical, because I don't want to hear an hour and a half of Frankie Valli singing or a guy singing like Frankie Valli, because his voice, quite frankly, kind of annoys me at times. And it was a very unique voice. But it's not something I'd want to hear too much of. It was great for just, you know, a catchy tune on the radio now and then. So I don't have that connection to Frankie Valli. I don't have that connection to history that a lot of the audience is going to have. I don't have a connection to the Broadway show. It does get a little bit long, like every Clint Eastwood movie. And he's not in it. He hasn't directed himself, I think, since Gran Torino. And that's because he hates empty chairs. We all know that. So he has to sit in the director's chair whenever he's doing a movie. But this film has some good moments, but overall it's presented in a very formulaic, patterned, predictable, expected way. and kind of left me cold, especially with its 2 hour plus running time. So I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
But of course, if you're a huge fan of the show or the band or Clint Eastwood, you'll probably love this movie. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next one, we're going to be talking about Think Like a Man 2. I'll get to that in a second. Let's just play the trailer. Kevin Hart headlines an ensemble cast about a group of friends who go to Vegas for a wedding and get into all sorts of trouble during the bachelor and bachelorette parties.
I'm in Las Vegas. From the casinos to the clubs, the pools and the strip bars, it's the best place in the world for men and women to get their freak on. I'm in the house. And it's still the number one destination for couples to do the craziest thing of all, get married.
Mom! Are you in the adjoining suite?
Let's go.
This is your bachelor party.
The next 24 hours, the boys will be with the boys.
And the girls with the girls.
In this battle of the sexes, I was determined to keep us ahead of the girls.
You're rolling with the pros.
Let's go.
What's fascinating about this movie is how associated with Kevin Hart this is. This is a massive cast. I was like 4 or 5 guys and 4 or 5 women. I mean, there's a lot of people in this cast. And it's the same cast from the first film. Now, the story holds together a little bit better because the first Think Like a Man was sort of a fictionalized telling of Steve Harvey's relationship book. It had trouble really hammering out a storyline because it was dealing with so many relationships. This one has, everybody has relationship issues, but there's one or two main ones. And really, the point of the movie isn't the on-again, off-again, and interpersonal relationships between the men and the women. It's basically a chance for screwball comedy. And what's funny, I had the opportunity to see Kevin Hart in Cleveland. I interviewed him on the red carpet, and he said before the premiere of the movie, because they showed the movie there too, he made the point that this is kind of a mainstream comedy. It's not a black comedy. Whereas even something like Ride Along, which was him and Tim Story worked on earlier this year, that arguably is a little bit more fits into that category of the black movie because it has two big stars and it plays off of their urban caricatures that they sometimes have. But this one is far more mainstream. It just happens to be cast with a bunch of black people. And they all work well. I don't know, a lot of them, I don't know whether they can carry a movie fully. I mean, Kevin Hart and Michael Ealy, along with Regina Hall, who was also in this, helped carry About Last Night, which was a pretty good movie that came out earlier in this year, just recently hit video. But, you know, like they have Megan Good, who I'm a huge fan of Megan Good because I think she's just freaking amazing looking. But I don't know if she can carry a movie. But she doesn't need to. She needs to carry like 1/6 of this movie, and she's fine. Gabrielle Union. I also am a huge fan of Gabrielle Union. She can carry a movie. She's never really broken out of that B-list status. So, I mean, it was just a shame because she's a beautiful woman and a very good actor. But, you know, she does fine in this movie as well. And they got a nice mix in here. This is meant not to preach. It's not really meant to do anything but just make people laugh. And it does. It has some very funny moments. It has some corny moments, too. Don't get me wrong. It's not perfect. But you know what? I found myself enjoying it. I thought the trailer looked terrible when I first saw it, but it seemed to work out. It does what Mom's Night Out tried to do for sort of the Christian audience, only this one does it for the PG audience. It's trying to be like a Hangover or Bridesmaids without the heavy level of raunch, but some pretty outrageous, crazy moments. And they're very funny at times. And it has a little bit of heart in it. And I don't just mean that as a joke. It does have a certain degree of heart and it has a certain degree of charm to it. What's funny about it, though, is I don't know when they made this movie, when they wrote it, whether there was supposed to be as much Kevin Hart in it, but he ends up narrating it. And I think that they may have put that in because he has suddenly become this box office juggernaut where he is like the golden child in movies. So ultimately, I was surprised at how much I actually did enjoy Think Like a Man 2. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
I gotta go to a break. When I come back, I'm gonna be playing my Kevin Hart red carpet interview. We're gonna be talking box office and the world famous DVD roundup. Is the most annoying song to some people, and I have to admit to just loving the heck out of it. But what's interesting about this song, and I'm just going to say this before we move into the Kevin Hart interview, this is of course for the Lego movie. We'll be talking about that in the DVD roundup because that's new this week. But what's so hilarious, it's such a catchy tune, it's a great tune, everything is awesome, da, 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 da. And if you listen to the words, kind of what's amazing about it is the words are terrifying. because it says everything is awesome, everything is cool when you're part of a team, everything is awesome when you're living our dream. If you listen to the words, it fits with the context of the movie, because in the movie, the whole thing is do the work exactly as it's supposed to be done and don't have any creativity, do exactly what you're told and be happy, dumb, and stupid. And that's what Emmett, the character in the Lego movie, is trying to stop happening. And the rest of the master builders are trying to do open up expression and freedom and in the movie. But if you listen to the song keeps you down. But it's just such a cool song. It's sort of like how people misinterpret Born in the USA. People want to play it at political rallies. It's a Vietnam protest song. Just because the name of the song is ironically given as Born in the USA does not mean that it's a pro-patriotic song. That's kind of the way Everything Is Awesome is. Everything Is Awesome is a song, an awesome song, but if things were exactly what the song says is awesome, it wouldn't be very awesome. I think I just broke my brain, and I apologize to everybody else for breaking the brain. Let's talk about something a little bit more easy to just fly through. And this is my interview with Kevin Hart, who is from, of course, Think Like a Man 2. He was in Cleveland because, even though he's from Philly, he has a great affinity for the Cleveland city because it is where he shot his concert film Seriously Funny. And that was one of the movies that really started to put him on the map, because the guy's been around since the 90s and he's been doing stand-up, but he's been in a bunch of movies that nobody remembers him in. He kind of came out of nowhere, but he had been around for a while. So he's paid his dues, and it's him giving back to Cleveland. It was great to meet him. I had a chance to talk to him. So I just want to play this little bit before we move on. And it's our press line and kind of what he had to say. He was a real nice guy. And I was there sweating because it was roasting hot. And I tower over him because he's a very short guy and I'm dripping sweat, and he didn't even care. Good for him. I probably got him wet by just spraying perspiration on him. Anyways, this is my interview with Kevin Hart. Do you think this is going to be number one at the box office this weekend?
I like to speak things into existence, so it's not about what I think. I'm going to say it's what I know. Yes, I believe in our fan base. I believe in the following that we have with this particular movie. Yes, I do believe that we will be number one in the box office. Okay. Yes.
So who's your favorite leading lady to work with? You've done a couple, even just this year.
My favorite leading lady to work with? I would say, man, that's tough because I love all the ladies I work with. Like, we've all got great relationships. I mean, all of my ladies from Think Like a Man 2 are amazing women to work with, so I'm going to go with all of the above. I think that question gets me in trouble if I answer and I say one. They'll all punch me tomorrow, so I ain't going to do that.
All right. Takes place in Vegas. What's the craziest thing you've ever done in Vegas, just between you and me? What happened?
Craziest thing I've ever done in Vegas between me, you, and all of your people that love you. Craziest thing. Craziest thing I've probably ever done in Vegas was gamble, lose, then go to the bank, come back, gamble some more, go back to the bank, go back to the casino, gamble again, say, I'm not going back to the bank, talk to my friend, go to my friend's bank, and then go to my bank, and then went back again. After about 6 bank trips, I realized that my bank isn't the problem. It was me, and I possibly developed the problem. So I talked to myself for like 2 hours. I had a 2-hour conversation with myself. Not even in the mirror. I was just sitting down in the seat. And there were other people around. I just didn't want to talk to them. And I really told myself, you need to stop this. And then I went back to the bank. And that was a trip that made me say, I'm not going anymore. And I lost again. And you're going to think I'm lying here. And in the morning, I woke up. I went back to the bank again. I probably went to the bank about 8 times. That's probably my worst. But then I don't gamble no more. So everything happens for a reason.
You seem to be king of the box office this year. When do you think you're going to get a call to do Marvel? Or they got openings for the Justice League coming up?
Well, A, I don't think nobody wants to see my little legs in no tights. So if I did get that call, I gotta hang up on it. That's an embarrassment for me. I would probably ruin the franchise if y'all put me in that right there. And I don't know what superhero. Unless they bring Mr. Hankey. Unless Mr. Hankey becomes a superhero, I can't do nothing with superhero.
I'd go see a Mr. Hankey movie.
That's about it. That's all I got.
Funny stuff. I would totally watch a Mr. Hankey movie starring Kevin Hart. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about box office. Will Kevin Hart be correct? Is he going to will Think Like a Man 2 into box office winning existence? I think he will. But before we talk about that, let's talk about last week. Was I correct? I said $60 million for How to Train Your Dragon 2. And that was actually a lowball prediction compared to some of the predictions I was seeing in the 70 plus million range, even though I was wrong in the sense that it didn't win the box office. 22 Jump Street did it. It got $57 million, which is really phenomenal for an R-rated comedy. Then How to Train Your Dragon 2 came in at 49.5. And that's not bad. Don't get me wrong. It's not bad. It's going to make money. It's going to do fine overseas because of the expansion of the market in 3D. But I was absolutely right at people who were predicting big numbers for the movie were letting their feelings get in the way. And my trend of prediction, which went against everybody else's, was correct, that it would not do as well as everybody thought it would. But it's nothing to sneeze at for How to Train Your Dragon 2. But it didn't reach the level of like Despicable Me 2. It'll do fine overseas. Don't have a bake sale for How to Train Your Dragon 2. Anyways, this weekend, I think it's going to be $45 million for Think Like a Man. That's a little higher than some people are predicting. But I honestly think Kevin Hart has gotten so much momentum. And this is exactly the kind of movie people see Kevin Hart for. About Last Night did well, but it was a little bit softer, but that's because it was just more a straight romance for Valentine's Day, and it was going up against the Lego Movie. This one's kind of open. He's going up against Jersey Boys, and Jersey Boys is not good. I mean, that's going to make $10 million. It's opening weekend. Anyways, we need to move on, and you hear that song. That means it's time to go to the world-famous DVD Roundup. Yeehaw! I have a spotlight this week. Sunday was Father's Day, and Father's Day is such a challenging time for me because all the stuff that people get for fathers, I don't like. I'm not into sports. I don't go to an office, so getting me a tie is not going to do me a doggone bit of good. I don't golf. Pretty much anything that you would get your father, you say a Father's Day card, it always has pictures of golf and fishing and sports, and I don't do any of that. Get me Star Wars videos for Star Wars. Get me the Lego Movie figurines. That's the kind of stuff I want for Father's Day. I'm a dork. I'm a geek, and I admit it. It's just that Father's Day isn't made for me. But one of the movies that has a great Father's Day bit is Creepshow, which is a 1982 horror movie written by Stephen King, directed by George A. Romero of the Night of the Living Dead fame. And the first story in it, it's an anthology, and it has five stories. The first one is Father's Day, which is a horribly terrifying story about a dead father who comes back to life and as a corpse comes and wants his Father's Day cake. It's really horrifying. I mean, it's corny and pulpy and campy, but it is not exactly, it's not a charming Father's Day story. But I watch it every year, and I just recently got the Blu-ray. While the Blu-ray's bare bones and the transfer isn't great, it's good to have Creepshow on my shelf because I've loved this movie ever since I was a kid, ever since I saw it in 1982 when I was way too young to see it. It's a lot of fun. And I watch Father's Day with my kids every year. It's a lot of fun. So let's move on to the rest of the DVD roundup. The big one, of course, is the Lego Movie. Everything is Awesome. And here's the one to get. You want to pick up the Everything is Awesome edition because even though it's an expanded box, so it's a thick box, because it has a 3D bust relief of Emmett. In the case, it also comes with a Vitruvius mini figurine of Lego, which is, of course, the wizard who Morgan Freeman voices, the hippy-dippy wizard. The Blu-ray comes, it has the Blu-ray and has the DVD, but it also has a 3D Blu-ray in there as kind of a bonus. It's worth getting because you kind of get the whole package, and this movie looks great in 3D. The animated films tend to look fantastic in 3D because they don't go through a conversion. They just render them that way. And that's a great one to pick up. The other one that's another big top choice for me is The Grand Budapest Hotel, which is Wes Anderson's latest film. It's on Criterion this week. Pick it up. It's one of the best movies of the year. Wes Anderson, I mean, if you don't like Wes Anderson, skip it because it's very Wes Anderson. I love Wes Anderson. It's probably going to top my list. Both that and the Lego Movie, it's going to be hard to knock those off my top 10 list by the time the next 6 months roll through. Another one to check out is Ernest and Celestine. This is the lesser known animated film that was nominated for an Oscar, and it's a French-Belgian production about a mouse that forms an unlikely relationship and friendship with a bear. And it's a very charming movie. It's very European. It has that European feel. It's by the people who did The Triplets of Belleville and The Secret of the Kells. So it has that not quite mainstream aspect to it, but it's very charming and sweet, and it's great to watch with kids. So check out Ernest and Celestine too. Other ones to talk about, you've got Adjust Your Tracking, which is a documentary about VHS collecting, which I don't quite get, but I respect. Joyride 3 Roadkill, which is another Joyride movie, and it's a slasher movie on the road, directed by Declan O'Brien, who I've surprisingly seen a lot of his movies. His stuff tend to be a little more punishing than somebody like Roland Rene, who also does some great direct-to-video stuff. There's House of Cards Season 2 on DVD, Teen Wolf Season 3 Volume 2, and a movie called Alpha Alert, which is not a bad little movie about three soldiers who have PTSD who are trapped in an elevator. Walk of Shame is the stinker of the week because they didn't screen it for me. They refused to show it to me, so it can't be very good. Next week, we're going to be talking about Transformers, Age of Michael Bay's inability to escape his own franchise. Bwah! Until then, have a fat time at the movies.